Kevin Walsh here, The Kevin Walsh Show, a Sports Grid podcast, back again. I wanted to really ramp it up for Super Bowl week. We've done that so far. It is our third day in a row. We're going to talk about the NBA trade deadline. We'll talk a little bit about the NBA slate. I do have four picks locked into the college basketball card, so we will go over that as well. I do want to just get out in front of this. I know I said I'd be here all 5 days. I am unsure on tomorrow only because timing, I do not know if I'll be able to push it back a recording far enough to get in all of the deadline stuff. And I just don't think the podcast is worth it for you guys tomorrow. If I record at noon or if I 2:45, even at 3:30, will I be able to go long enough to, you know, get through everything? So if I don't do one tomorrow, and I might still do it, and, you know, maybe I'll try and get it out super early. I don't know. But if I do not do one tomorrow, we'll make good on Friday, longer episode. Maybe we'll bring some people in the mix, but I promise this won't be the last time this week. But just with the when I have to record with the deadline, I don't want to do an episode just for the sake of it tomorrow. There's plenty for us to get into today. Let us begin with Anthony Davis being traded to the Washington Wizards and a deal that I adore. A deal that is somewhat reminiscent of Utah's move where they brought in Jaren Jackson Jr. And for Washington, it's kind of even more perfect because the Wizards have now successfully brought in, let's call it, two of the 30 most talented players in the NBA. They have largely brought them in on the cheap, and they've also, just call it what it is, they will be able to bring these guys in without even remotely impacting their tank. The Wizards right now have by far the worst point. They still have the worst point differential in basketball. Only Sacramento is within shouting distance, and they are a game off of the Kings in the win column of two games back, or, you know, three in the loss, but the Wizards are going to be awful. And the Wizards maybe will run AD and Trae Young out there for a game or two, but it's not likely, and it is not going to throw anything off as they try and continue to nosedive towards one of the elite prospects in this draft class. And if they are successful, the Wizards starting lineup next year could look something like Trae Young, Darren Peterson, Bilal Coulibaly, Alex Sarr, and Anthony Davis. Yes, please. That'll do. Sounds good here. They will have multiple All-Stars, plus a potential year one mid-season All-Star level guy if they draft the right guy in this class. And what I think works well for Washington is they are kind of set up to draft whomever. Darren Peterson or Dibansa would fit in swimmingly. And if you end up with Boozer, where this team now with Sarr and AD are a little loaded in the front court, I think you can just kind of tempt fate a little bit and play huge. I do. Because Sarr is going to try to continue to expand that three-point game. We'll see, you know, what he gets that three-point shot up to, right? Boozer is a willing shooter. He's obviously, that's the facet of his game that he's going to look to define the most. But so far at Duke, I mean, it's 38%. You'll take that. It just also would be, again, if that team's starting lineup was Trae Young, Kyshawn George, or let's say they went super offense in the front court and went Trae Young, Trey Johnson, and then went Sarr, Boozer, AD, I promise you they will have a very good defense. Despite starting Trae Young and Trey Johnson in the front court. I promise you that fact. So it is a team in the Wizards who have set themselves up now after all these years of tanking. Next year, we have expectations. Next year, we have a win total that is supposed to be within, you know, hey, could we get to 500? And there will be trepidation around Trey and AD because of health, and that is totally understandable. It absolutely is. But it is a team, especially in Washington. Again, we just talked about the world where they draft Boozer and having Sarr. You don't need Anthony Davis to play 80 games. You need Anthony Davis to play 65 games. 60, right? And then be ready for a postseason stretch. If you are Washington, again, you collect and collect and collect assets in hopes that you can bring a player of this talent level into your roster. They've brought two in. And it's not thrown off the tank at all. They're not throwing bad money on top of bad money. These are unbelievable buy lows that they have executed. I love it. I love it. And Trae Young and Anthony Davis is just a pairing that works. It's a pairing I've wanted to see for some time. It's one of the best offensive playmakers the NBA has to offer. And it's one of the best defensive anchors in Anthony Davis playing side by side. I mean, that two-man game just absolutely works. And again, they have pieces in-house they like and will look to continue to bring along. Bob Carrington, a name I haven't even mentioned yet. You know, Kyshawn George has had himself a really, really nice sophomore season. 15-5-5 is nothing to ignore on 38% from beyond the arc. So, I mean, listen, I'll probably place it for the jokes, but yeah, I'll take the Jazz Wizards NBA exact finals matchup next year for a dollar. Why not? These teams are better. These teams are better, and they gave up assets they were able to give up. Chris Middleton, AJ Johnson, Malachi, none of this is relevant. Two firsts, 3 seconds, and they can move off of that because they didn't have to move off of their own picks, primarily the pick that is supposed to be within this year's draft. For Dallas, you know, it's crazy, man, because to some degree, I feel as if the guy Dallas should have really wanted to get back is the guy that Anthony Davis is joining in Trae Young. Now, not that Dallas was ever going to acquire Trae from Washington, but I think really the story of this all for the Mavericks here is how poorly timed the Anthony Davis trade has been. Nico was fired a long time ago, like pretty early into the Dallas Mavericks season. We saw Nico Harrison fired, and it was right then and there we knew, okay, Anthony Davis is going to likely be dealt. I think it was like early November, October, late October when that all came through, and I was like, ooh, AD probably doesn't put the Mavs jersey back on. And they just kept running him out there despite multiple other additional injury issues. And the longer they waited, perhaps the suitors dropped from the dance and they ran at the first sign of draft picks. But when you have Cooper Flagg, a guaranteed future top 10 player in this league, which is exactly what Cooper Flagg is, there's a baseline level of talent you'd like to keep in-house. You've now not done that. Again, trading AD was the right move. But in what you've brought back, nothing to be excited about. Again, I know I'm high man on Trae Young, but I would have been optimistic on a Cooper Flagg-Trae Young combination. Take some of these playmaking responsibilities off of Coop. A still loaded Mavericks front court. You know, if you ever can get Derek Lively healthy with Flagg, I mean, you're going to have defensive pieces behind Trae Young. Again, Trae Young is an all-star caliber guard. You want to have Cooper Flagg play alongside an all-star. And I don't think this is a team who would have not been able to get picks back had they sent Anthony Davis to Atlanta that time ago. But they were steadfast, stuck the chest out. Hey, we don't want Trae Young. Well, this whole league decided to get prideful, and now the Wizards have Anthony Davis and Trae Young and have set themselves up to be competitive next season. I mean, that's just a huge win. And you know, for Dallas, it's just, an organization that is trying to clean up a mess that they really never should have been in with the Luka Doncic deal. I think moving off of AD was the right move. I don't think this is a move that they're going to be pumped about, though. Getting back OKC's first-round pick this year. Oh, gee, thanks, the 30th pick. Awesome. It's basically, you know how when a second round pick is within the top five of round two, they go, it's basically a first? Well, getting OKC's first round pick is basically a second. So it's just hard to be excited about that if you're Dallas. Maybe the Dallas people are, I'm not. And I think the Washington folks should be incredibly excited. Because this year, call it what it is, the tank's exciting. I know Wizards fans, they are excited and happy about the tank because of this draft class. And now next year, you should be done with that. You should not be floundering any longer. And I think that is fantastic. Now, the big deal that got finalized that we spoke about loosely yesterday was James Harden and Darius Garland in pretty much a swap for one another. And this is really fascinating, and it's quite hilarious that these two teams play tonight, and they play with neither guy taking the floor. I guess Harden is just going to take a beat to get acclimated, or doesn't want his first game after being traded away from the Clippers to be against the Clippers. Maybe just thinks, you know what, let's not do that. I'll debut at Sacramento, or hey, I'll just wait to get back home. There's a Wizards game that they play at home, and it's the last game before the break. I don't know. Maybe Harden will just take the break. I have no idea. Garland not playing, though. Not surprising. Not healthy. And that is an under-discussed storyline in this whole situation. As people are pointing fingers at the Cavs for making this deal, the fact that they are willing to obviously does not suggest good things about Darius Garland's health, right? That a Cavs team that has a core all still in their prime or not there yet to move off of a 26-year-old point guard for a 36-year-old point guard says they don't trust Darius Garland. And that is concerning if you're the Clippers, though it's hard to care that much because I don't think the Clippers are, in the big picture, that relevant to the NBA this season from a championship. Hey, who can win it? Who can go into a conference finals run? I know they've won a bunch of games. They've had much, much, much better seasons and have still fallen short. And if the Clippers were going to let Harden walk for nothing, then even if Garland ultimately is never going to be healthy enough to be a guy, the Clippers can take that risk because the alternative was nothing. So it's fine for the Clippers, but I don't know if this is some big win for Los Angeles because Cleveland being willing to give up on Darius Garland is a very concerning sign on a player who has once in his NBA career played 70 games. One time Darius Garland has played 70 games. Darius Garland got hurt at Vanderbilt. Played 5 college games. He's been hurt a lot. Maybe that's the Clipper specialty, though. Maybe that's what they specialize in. For Cleveland, there is the what does this mean for right now, but I'm going to be a little annoying for a second. Because now that, again, we can all pretty much agree Darius Garland was not highly coveted, right? The Cleveland Cavaliers should have LeBron James on their roster right now. And it is one of those things that I just, people like to be loudly wrong about LeBron, and it emboldens others to jump on the train. I know for a fact this offseason, I did it here on this podcast with Friezo. I'm sure I'll talk to him again about it soon, right? The idea of Cleveland, after another shortcoming in the postseason, bringing LeBron back because maybe LeBron's time in Los Angeles was done. And instead you had, and it's not as if they'll ever hear this or would care, Bill Simmons and Ryan Russillo high-fiving through the screen as in agreement over the Cleveland Cavaliers obviously should not be interested in bringing LeBron in. Why would they ever consider that? Garland is universes better. Allen is universes better. What would ever be the point of that? And now here we are in a situation where we're attempting to assess, can this Cleveland team post Harden trade get on a run? The stopping point for most people is, well, I don't trust Harden in the playoffs, which flatly means had they just traded for LeBron in the offseason, Cleveland would have the second best odds to win the championship. That's just what it is. Yet people, nope, Cleveland not that interested in LeBron. For what? For what? For a chance to win a championship. For a chance to win a conference. You want to galaxy brain this and say, all in all, Cleveland will win out on their patience because LeBron will show up next year in a Cavs uniform for free. And ultimately, LeBron would have been joining what is now in this case Harden, but or Garland, and it is better to have more talent. And one, let's just agree that that is galaxy braining the situation. That is spinning this into a positive when, you know, a lot of dominoes had to fall to make that feel on the board. But then let's also realize, even though LeBron is just still somehow really good, you don't know what it's going to be in year 24. You just don't know. You can't know. That's as much as you would think, you know, I would want to. No, you know LeBron will be great. I don't think that's fair to say you know LeBron will be great. I mean, it stinks, but injury is likelier the longer this goes. But what I know for sure is Cleveland could have got LeBron this offseason, and they would have been better for it. And they would be Eastern Conference favorites. And people swore up and down that was ridiculous. Some of it through the lens of the value of Darius Garland. And that also, the entire time, ridiculous. Proof positive that now 36-year-old James Harden, the Cavs thought was a better bet. And I don't really disagree, because Harden is better than Garland. The debate on the value of the two is just longevity. Harden is better today. He was better yesterday. He'll be better tomorrow. Harden will be better for the rest of this season and more available. So Cleveland got better. They just did. Yes, I am annoyed. I know that that is a me thing more than most in making this about LeBron, but I'm sorry, I'm valid in doing so because everyone thinks LeBron's going to be a Cav next year. And it's crazy that we're just wasting 33% of the remainder of his career, possibly. I wonder how the Harden-LeBron stuff, or how the Harden stuff lands for LeBron. I do. Maybe you don't. I don't know why. It's interesting. Harden is not one of the guys that, like, we know LeBron has a great relationship with, like Steph, right? Like Kevin Durant. So, you know, it makes you wonder a little bit. But Harden is a better playmaker than Darius, and that should then make Mobley or Allen just more dangerous. Harden is less of a defensive liability. Where you worry about Harden is when you have to rely on him, you don't expect him to be there. What I would say is this Cleveland team could be set up well enough to withstand that, at least in the Eastern Conference. Harden last year in the series against Denver averaged 19-9. But ultimately, they pushed the Denver Nuggets, who a lot of people believe were one of the two best teams in the NBA last season based on the series they gave OKC. We don't have to debate that, but that's the belief. That was enough to give that Clippers team the chance to push Denver to 7. So can Harden be enough in the Eastern Conference to get this Cavs team to the conference finals, where they have not been able to get to since LeBron left? Yes. Absolutely. I think this is a team who made a short-term win-now decision in bringing in Harden, and I don't really blame them for that, because we've talked about a team like the Knicks doing it, the Sixers doing it, the Magic, why the Cavs wouldn't do it would be beyond me. So in that lane, it all tracks. It all really, really tracks. I don't want to go too much crazier than that. We did just see Chris Haynes say that Chris Paul, oh look, and this came out as well from Shams, Chris Paul is going to get moved around and then waived. So CP3 is going to be a free agent. We'll see where he lands when the dust settles. I don't know. You'd think maybe he wants to play with LeBron, live in Los Angeles, because since the Clippers are not an option, I would think the Lakers would be the favorite in this matter. But who knows? We'll see. I want to just kind of leave the NBA there. I don't think I'm missing something crazier that I should be getting to. And I want to just... Oh, Jared McCain. You know, what I will say on McCain is for Oklahoma City, they bring in a young, cost-controlled, upside shooter who had a brilliant rookie month. I am not sure he will ever have a stretch of basketball as good as that in his whole career. But if there is one place that can bank on giving McCain time and living with the volatility, it is obviously Oklahoma City. And it's an Oklahoma City team that needs bodies right now. I've talked about it, you know, across different spots. It's just, they're just so unhealthy. They just got bad SGA news. And I could care less about anything OKC gives up for anything, quite frankly. They have so many picks, it's laughable. Who cares? So for OKC, I like the gamble. I do think it shows that there could be some... Again, McCain might have had the best stretch month of his career. That's not off the board. For Philly, I do wonder if adding assets is in any way tied to a big swing that they would like to make within the next 23 hours. And that's where I want to leave that. Here's what I'll just say on the NBA slate. It is so hard, man, to... The Oklahoma City Thunder were -2.5 last night against San Antonio. I truly thought, hey, the Spurs were interesting. I did not make a single bet on the game. The Spurs are a 10.5-point favorite. No one is playing for OKC, second leg of a back-to-back. Books didn't prep it. Just didn't prep it. Boston, second leg of a back-to-back. Maybe no Jaylen Brown. They were 5.5 going to Houston, now 7.5. It's just a madhouse out there in the NBA. It really, really is. And it happens. And, you know, timing bets, we say, is important. But beating numbers because it gets bet is one thing. Betting into a game where the books actually don't have even close to all the information they need to, it is, you could argue, a bit of a crapshoot. You could also just say, hey, if any team is playing on a back-to-back against a team who is not on open, bet that other team. But also yesterday, we took a Sixers team on the second leg of the back-to-back, going to Golden State, no Joel Embiid, number climbed up to 4.5. They won the game by 19. So I'm not on the NBA card tonight. As of now, as I say, if something jumps out, I'll get in the mix. I'll tweet that out to the people, okay? Four picks on the college board for me tonight. I play two sides. I play these a little bit lighter. I took 9.5 with Oklahoma against Kentucky. Yes, I am a Kentucky fan, and I've never bet against Kentucky basketball in the way that I have this season. Specifically, the fact that I actually laid points against UK the other week when they went to Vanderbilt. This is a team who in conference has been booked as a favorite 5 times. They've covered once, and they are 4-1 straight up. 9.5 is probably too many. OU, who are struggling to break through and grab a second conference win, and they've had some gut-wrenchers, the Mizzou overtime loss, the Arkansas blown lead, which I was on, unfortunately, 2 points at Bama. I think they'll be up for this game. Otega Owe, though, going against his former school last year was brilliant, and he's starting to look like he actually could end up being the SEC player as he was projected of the year, as he was projected to be. But look, if Kentucky wins by double digits, credit to him. What I've seen, this is more of a 4 or 5 point Kentucky win. I took the 9.5, and I am doing something I did yesterday, and I thought I had it. With Miami of Ohio, laid 4.5 on the road. I know what the spot says. You know, Miami of Ohio was up. Let me get the specifics of this because it was a tough little watch. Up 6 with 1.5 minutes left. And then it's like, all right, we're getting into the foul game. And they missed the front end of all these free throws. A bunch of 1-and-1s, and they ended up winning the game, but not covering, only 1 by 2. Hopefully it doesn't happen again. But I think Clemson is just built to give Stanford nothing. I laid 3.5 on the road. I know it's the West Coast trip. Clemson is playing good ball. They play super slow, and they play great defense. And Abuka Okori is the best player on Stanford, averaging 22 a night as a freshman guard. He's good. He is. He turns the ball over quite a bit, and he has some rough shooting games under his belt. He had a game against Cal. He scored 14 points. On 1 of 16 shooting. If he can't get to the line a ton in this game, I think he will struggle to score, and then therefore Stanford will struggle to score. So I'm going to lay the 3.5 with Clemson. There is a non-ranked, but like maybe two top 25 teams in Alabama and Texas A&M SEC game with a total tonight of 180.5. What an absolute beaut. Excited to watch this one. I'm going to play the dog team total. So that's A&M over 85.5. The Bama number looks too inflated. But maybe they are due to score 115 points. If they do, good for them. If they don't, I don't want any part of it. A&M is playing back-to-back games, one against Georgia, one against Bama. They grade out defensively and tempo-wise almost identical. Except Bama's a bit worse defensively and a bit quicker. And we're seeing the same team total. A team total in which the Aggies went over, scoring 92 on the road at UGA. Scored 51 in that first half. I like the Aggies over the 85.5. My favorite bet tonight, over 149.5, Illinois Northwestern. That's at minus 115. If you get to minus 150, that is fine. Or if you get over 150.5, that is fine. Don't not do minus 150. But Illinois Northwestern over the 149.5. These teams played about 2 weeks ago, give or take, at this point here, maybe three, and it just went under what was a $151.5, went under by 4. I think this number's probably dropped a little bit just because they tend to do that in a rematch where it doesn't go that way. Illinois, off of all these huge games in a row, these incredible wins at Purdue, at Nebraska, I think the defense lets up a little bit tonight, but this is the best offense in college basketball. I think these teams let it fly from beyond the arc. Keaton Wagler continues to look like an absolute megastar, and we get points in this game, so I'm going to play the over at 149.5. I will tell you this. I was tempted to play under in the Houston game. I just backed off a little bit, though. I was tempted to grab the points with Minnesota, but I have seen Michigan State come into games just PO'd and smash teams. Those were looks. I didn't play them. The BYU number ran up. They started at like 5.5. They're up like 7.5 now. So there was a couple of other spots I considered. What I am going to try and find, I haven't figured out the combination yet, but Kingston Flemings is in a big-time bounce-back spot, coming off a single-digit scoring effort. In his young career, the follow-up games so far, he has scored 20, 25, 21, and 15. And then Dibonce is in a big-time step-up spot. Pacey back-and-forth high-scoring game against Oklahoma State, where he kind of got punked, I think, a little bit by Darren Peterson in that game. Dibonce, first time in a long time, didn't score 20-plus. The last time that happened, he scored 43. So I'm going to look for some Dibonce-Flemings combinations because you're not getting cheap numbers on either guy, even if I think they should get through. So I may play, you know, try and find something short, right, that gets me to around even money, and then maybe I'll do a little ladder, right? 20-25, 25-30, I try and find some stuff out. But if you are playing college basketball player props, Flemings and Dibonce are certainly looks on this board tonight. That is what we are going to do here for you on this Wednesday edition. Again, TBD on tomorrow, definitely again this week. I want to see kind of where everything lands with the deadline. Appreciate the support throughout the week. You guys are awesome. Make sure you follow me over on Twitter at the Kevin Walsh. Subscribe, rate 5 stars, get in the mix, people. It is the Kevin Walsh Show, a Sports Grid podcast. We'll see you next time.